Welcome to Uncovered. It's Wednesday. I'm Anthony Davis. He's Ron Filipkowski. We uncover the MAGA propaganda that is not covered by the mainstream media. So much to talk about. Of course, Trump in criminal trial. We've got the Speaker of the House who is under threat as we speak, and a whole lot more. So let's get straight into it, Filipkowski, and start with Trump's trial. We're starting to get to the actual females concerned in this trial now. Of course, you know, paying money to silence them so that it didn't jeopardize his chances of election in 2016. But it's Karen McDougal and Stormy Daniels' lawyer who is up and starting to make some opening statements. Just tell us what he's saying on the subject of Karen McDougal, of course, who Trump had an affair with. This just wasn't a one-night stand. This was, what, a 9-10-month relationship?
That's right, yeah. I think it was almost a year. You know, a lot of trials can be boring with a lot of downtime. I think Trump's civil fraud trial in New York had a lot of boring stretches. Matter of fact, probably 90% of it was boring. This trial is not boring. Like, literally, like, every minute of this trial is interesting, I think, to anyone watching it. And this is really, they're really getting into the good stuff now. The last witness who testified for two, three days was Keith Davidson, who is the attorney for both Karen McDougal and Stormy Daniels. And this is kind of one of the things that this guy did, is he had all these connections in the celebrity world who had bring him stuff. He's a lawyer, and he would represent these people and peddle their stories to different media outlets. So when McDougal, who was his client, came with the story, he was shopping this to it was between ABC and the Inquirer people, you know, the Inquirer people that Cohen was behind. And
David Pecker, who gave evidence last
Pecker,
last week.
Correct. Yes. And so what they wanted to do, the Inquirer people, was they said, well, we want you to deal just directly with Cohen. Take us out of the picture. And he wouldn't do it. He said, no, I know Cohen. I've dealt with him in the past. He's a difficult guy to deal with. He's always frantic and manic, and I don't want to deal with him. I just want to deal with you. And what he testified to is if they had taken themselves out of the picture and forced him to deal with Cohen, he was going with ABC. And it's really a tragedy that the McDougal story did not go to ABC, because they were going to do a major primetime, probably multi-night special with her, have her tell her whole story. And I think that would have been devastating to Trump, because that was a time, people forget, that Trump was really struggling to hang on to the evangelical vote, which was critical for him to be able to win. And this would have undercut it, because she was going to detail an affair that took place throughout Melania's pregnancy. And it would have been really, really devastating stuff to Trump. And so the thing about it is, what did she want? She didn't want just money. They were both offering about the same amount of money, which is around $150,000. But she didn't want to sort of come off as somebody who was just taking the money for her story. She wanted a new career. And so what did ABC offer her in addition to the money? A tryout on Dancing with the Stars. Okay, so maybe you might get on Dancing with the Stars. That didn't really appeal to her. What the Inquirer people offered her was, because they have multiple magazines, was that she could go in one of their style magazines and write a whole series of articles. And I think she wrote about 50 articles for them. So it would look like they were hiring her as a writer, and she could try and build a new career as a writer. So that's why she ended up going with them and not ABC, which also meant that caused the story to be suppressed. As we know, I'm not sure that she fully knew that at the time, but I think she probably didn't mind that it was suppressed, because she just wanted the money and a new career, and that's what she got. So it really is a tragedy that it ended up going to them. And that's really what this case is all about, is how, because it went to them, the election was interfered with.
It's interesting, isn't it, how some people make a living? I mean, this is just an aside, really, isn't it? But, you know, having to sell a story in the first place about an affair, and then at the same time try and get some cross promotion with maybe writing some articles about cosmetics or beauty or whatever. I mean, it's tough out there. It really is. And I think that for these people, especially in the industry where you've worked in modeling, or, you know, Stormy Daniels working in adult entertainment, everyone's always desperate to get out of those industries and into something a little bit more stable. And so I'm just trying to really tip our hat to how hard it is for people, and people will do anything just to put food on the table sometimes.
It was interesting, Pecker's testimony, to get a real good look behind the scenes at this industry, the tabloid industry, and how they get stories. And it's really not organic at all. It's not like these things just naturally that people drive down to the Inquirer and say, I've got a story for you. It's not like that at all. They have people out there actively seeking stories, and they cultivate connections with all these different people in various industries, whether it's cab drivers, Uber drivers, people who are paralegals in lawyers' offices. They have all these different hooks that they use. And they have people like this guy Davidson, who as a lawyer, that's what he does. He combs these people, looks for these stories, signs them up, and then takes them to media outlets. So, I mean, it's definitely a seedy industry, that's for sure. And it's also very lucrative. There's a lot of money that gets thrown around. And some of these stories never get run. I mean, a lot of these people, like he talked about Arnold Schwarzenegger, threw a lot of names out there. Mark Wahlberg, apparently, he suppressed a story where Wahlberg just got in an argument with his wife. It was a very heated argument, apparently. Nothing very scandalous, but Wahlberg didn't want that story to run. So he agreed to sit down with an interview for them, and they killed the story. So there's all kinds of stuff like that.
I'm very used to this stuff because, of course, the British tabloid press started all of this. Right. And, you know, the British royal family were always trying to shut stories down and swap. I'll give you an interview if you don't run that story, or I'll give you a photograph if you don't run that photograph. I mean, it's exhausting, and it's still going on, of course, as many people know. Let's talk about Stormy Daniels now, because he is representing her as well. How is he kind of presenting these two different kind of versions of the same case?
Well, the Stormy Daniels story is very different than the way the McDougal thing played out as far as the negotiations and all of that go, because the McDougal story, I think, was pretty early on in the campaign, sort of midway through it. But the Stormy story had been out there. He said that he read about it on a blog. Apparently he combs the porn star blogs or something. So the lawyer saw it on a blog, and she was sort of shopping the story before, but nobody really cared that much about it. A porn star is claiming she had sex with Donald Trump. But he said it was after the Access Hollywood story broke that he and a few other people knew, okay, now the Stormy Daniels story is big, because Access Hollywood broke a month before the election. So then so he contacts Stormy and says, look, maybe your story wasn't worth that much before, but after Access Hollywood, now it's worth money. And so he started shopping it and took it to the Inquirer. They called Cohen. Cohen called Trump, and they said, yes, you know, we need to squash this thing right away. But the interesting thing here is that at this point, the Inquirer had already bought off the doorman story where Trump supposedly had the love child. And then they also paid for the McDougal story. They never got reimbursed for either one of those stories. So they're out $180,000 already out of pocket. And they basically just said on the Stormy thing, we're not paying this time. We're out. We're not getting involved here. You have to, Cohen's got to pay for this. And the crazy thing about that was, basically, they were desperate. Trump and Cohen were desperate to suppress the Stormy story, and they signed an agreement with her fairly quickly, but then they didn't pay. And Davidson was getting very upset as each day was going on. Where's the money? Where's the money? Where's the money? And what Trump was trying to do is slow play them until after the election, because the election was just a couple weeks away.
So he wouldn't have to pay it at all.
He was trying to stiff her. Yeah. They signed the agreement for her to keep quiet and not tell a story. And then he tried to not pay her. And basically what happened is this is all in text messages. So all these text messages were introduced to the jury, back and forth of them yelling at each other and threatening each other and stuff. So it was very, very interesting stuff. And this guy's not testifying from memory. These are all texts. And so what he said, look, that's it. I'm going public with this. You're going to wire me the money today, or I'm going. And this is like 9 days before the election. And then Cohen finally took out the home equity loan,
right?
And from his house for the $130,000. And then he set up the shell bank account, and then wired the money, and then the Stormy story got suppressed.
It really is interesting with Trump and people in his orbit. None of them seem to have any money, right? They're all like, they're all pretending that they're hugely wealthy and they have, you know, from gold toilets to everything else. And when it actually comes to coming up with the cash, as we've seen on with these bonds with Donald Trump, he still can't find $175 million. I mean, it's all for show. It's crazy, isn't it? And I was going to say that, you know, this notion of agreeing to do something where there's a payment involved and then not doing or not or trying to get out of making the payment, just in terms of character, that really is like the lowest of the low, isn't it? I mean, you know, there was a in London years ago, we used to refer to clip joints. A clip joint was where somebody would go to a hooker and the hooker would basically take the money and then disappear out the back door, right?
Sure,
and,
right, yeah.
And it's kind of old
that's
London
a, that's
history.
A common thing.
And Trump is a clipper. You know, he's like a clipper.
Yeah.
It's exactly what he does. The same process of just, you know, setting it all up, you know, agreeing the deal, and then doing a runner. Of course, I presume that the contract with Stormy Daniels, it's not valid if they haven't yet paid, right?
The deal is
we pay you, you shut up, right? But if one party is not playing ball, then the contract is void.
And Davidson said he was incredulous. He couldn't believe it. He said in the text, he's like, I brought you this on a silver platter. This could wreck the presidential campaign. You only have to pay $130,000, which is really, when you're talking about the presidency being on the line here, is pennies, is nothing. And he's like, I just can't believe that you guys are, with 9 days before the presidential election, this could sink you, that you're jerking me around like this. But they actually were. They were trying to shortchange them and rip them off. It just also shows the recklessness. I mean, he had the ability to stroke this check and make it go away, but he was trying to rip her off and almost blew it.
Ben made a very good hot take video earlier this morning that, you know, showed clips that the jury are seeing of Donald Trump denying any knowledge of these women, as he calls them.
Yeah.
Literally, like, at the beginning, I'd never heard of Stormy Daniels, nothing to do with me. And then over time, well, horseface Stormy, you know, I'm not attracted to her. And then, of course, that moment on Air Force One where he's point blank asked the question and he says, well, you know, you'll have to talk to my lawyer, Michael Cohen. I mean, when a jury is seeing video clips of Donald Trump lying, denying, changing his story over time, it's proof positive that he is, you know, covering and not telling the whole truth and nothing but the truth. I mean, this is going to be a big problem for him, all of this video evidence, right?
Pecker was invited to the White House right after the election.
Yeah.
As a thank you. To have a thank you dinner, and Pecker's wife refused to go because she knew why they got the invitation and wanted nothing to do with this whole slimy affair. So her husband took his editor with him instead. But this shows, like, obviously Trump was involved in all of this, because why would he invite the Inquirer publisher to the White House right after the election? It was to thank him for helping him win. So, but really the overarching thing here is this. There's really two layers to this. Layer number one is all this stuff we're talking about, which is how much of this is getting out to the public. It's not televised. There's no clips. I don't know. I don't have a way of gauging that. So, but also these women haven't testified yet. So theoretically there's going to be more coverage when that happens. But then the other part is the legal side, you know, the criminal side, which is still, you know, is this a crime? That is really what we haven't got into yet in the trial, is the elements of the offense and how it's a crime and all of that. So we still need to see that linked up. And that's the big question, because look, the bottom line on all of this is if he's acquitted, if he wins this trial, then that's going to be a huge thing for him. If he's convicted, it could be devastating for him, because now he's a convicted felon trying to get elected president.
He just got fined $9,000 for not abiding by the gag order. Just explain to us, because it was a choice, wasn't it? It was either prison or a cash fine. That really freaked Donald Trump out, didn't it?
Yeah, New York has every state has their own laws on this, which is it's contempt of court. You're violating a direct order from a judge. So that's what these orders are. And so typically the penalties on these aren't hugely severe. I know in Florida here, it's 6 months in jail is the most you can get. I think New York is probably something similar. And the maximum fine is $1,000. So those are your two choices. It's either put someone in jail for one day to 6 months or whatever it is in New York, 60 days, whatever it is, or $1,000 fine. So now keep in mind, the DA only asked for the maximum fine for each incident. But the interesting thing here is this, is that many of those violations involved not things that Trump said, not things that Trump said directly in his post, but articles that he posted from other people about the witness, from third parties.
So these are retweets or retruths. Yes. And the judge basically said a retruth constitutes your opinion because you reposted it.
As it should. And so what he warned him, the last sentence of the order is he said, look, this is the most I can do under New York law for a fine. I've already done this. If this continues, the only other remedy you'll force me to choose is jail. And so he's warned him. He's ordered him. He's warned him in writing. He's told him you're going to get jail time. But you know what? Trump just continues to violate. I mean, he just keeps doing it.
And why is that? Is it because he's goading the judge and goading the justice system? Or is it because he's just too dumb to remember?
There's two theories. What the MAGA people think is he's goading them. Yeah. They think he's doing it on purpose. And they even say they want Trump to go to jail because they think that if the judge puts him in jail, he's going to go up 10 points in the polls, that the American people are going to be outraged, upset, freaked out, and that's only going to help Trump. Now, I don't think Trump wants to spend 1 minute in jail, so I don't think he wants to go to – in my opinion, it's like this. MAGA thinks that he's doing it on purpose because he wants to go to jail to be a martyr. I think he's just completely undisciplined and can't control himself because that's how he is. He's impulsive, and that's what I think. So I think there's sort of two different theories going on, but I'm inclined to think the second one is true.
Okay, well, let's have a quick look at Horseface Trump making a complaint about why he would rather be campaigning than sitting in an icebox, as he describes it. Here he is.
So I appreciate you being here. Thank you very much. And I'm going to go into the icebox now and sit for about 8 hours or 9 hours. I'd much rather be in Georgia. I'd much rather be in Florida. I'd much rather be in states that are in place, they said, I'd like to be able to campaign.
Yeah, we'd much rather you'd be in jail. I get the feeling with him that, you know, he likes to give people nicknames and create these kind of marketing slogans. Icebox is the new one. I'm sure that whoever makes iceboxes is going to have a record month in sales. But, you know, this is his new description for the courthouse.
Well, that's a stupid thing for him to do, because the more he cries about how cold it is, the more he looks like weak and soft. And so I think he's making a huge mistake by continuing to complain about how cold it is. But that's just Trump being Trump. But the real key here is him talking about not being able to campaign, because that's the whole messaging here that the campaign has been using, not just Trump, but his campaign people, which is this trial is being done deliberately by the Democrats to keep Trump from being able to campaign. And that's the consistent theme on Fox News, on Newsmax, all over right-wing media. And so what I have determined to do, since I track Trump everywhere he goes, is to prove that that is not true by showing how on virtually every single off day, Trump is not campaigning. He's doing nothing. He's playing golf. So what have we had? So not this last weekend, but the weekend before, which is the first weekend in the middle of trial. What did Trump do? On Saturday, he had a rally scheduled in North Carolina for a night rally. So he did nothing all day Saturday. Then the night rally got canceled because of weather. So he did nothing on Saturday. Sunday, nothing at all. Then he had an off day on Wednesday. He played golf, no campaigning. Then he had this past Saturday off. He did nothing. This Sunday he had off. He did nothing. This Monday he had off. He did nothing. So he's had 6 off days since this trial started, and he did not campaign on any of those 6 days. Now, he's campaigning today. He's doing 2 rallies today on his off day. But the point is, his argument that he would be out in all these states doing all these campaigning if he wasn't stuck in trial is absolutely false, and I'll continue to document it every single off day.
Is there an argument to say that actually just him being in court and making these impromptu speeches to the camera afterwards is him campaigning and is actually a more beneficial form of campaigning than actually going to states and doing these rallies? Because, you know, the image that he is projecting is that he is a victim and this is election interference. And of course, we know that's garbage. But it does make sense to people who are in the cult. And so every single day that he complains and, you know, he gives examples and the gag order was another thing, you know, they're trying to silence me, all plays into the MAGA Republicans and their argument that this is, you know, the deep state versus Donald Trump.
Sure it does. But the question is, what do moderate voters think? And I think by him continuing to repeat the same stuff over and over every single day is where he's going to lose those voters, because he's got nothing new. He just keeps complaining about how long court is. Most people are like, sitting in court for 8 hours isn't torture. You know, the fact that it's cold in a courtroom is not torture, but you're making it out to be torture, that you're, you know, it's just exhausting you. And, you know, him falling asleep, complaining that he had to miss Melania's birthday when he hasn't been with Melania's birthday any of her last 3 birthdays, as I've documented.
Yeah.
He got out of court at 2:00 in the afternoon on Melania's birthday, which was a Friday. He got on his private jet. He went straight to Mar-a-Lago. He was there at like 6:00 at night. What did he do? He was hanging out with a professional boxer and a couple other people. Melania was not there. So he complained that the trial was preventing him from spending Melania's birthday with her. He was back at Mar-a-Lago 6-7 o'clock at night on her birthday. She was not there. So I think that if we just keep hammering away at his lies every single day, hopefully that'll get out to enough people.
And, you know, he needs the rest. He is old as Joe Biden, effectively, but, you know, in reality, he can't stay awake, not because it's cold, because that defies the laws of physics. Normally, the colder it is, the more awake you would stay. You would fall asleep in a warm room. So for some reason, he's kind of managed to convince the MAGA Republicans that a cold room makes you fall asleep, and no one's really questioning it, which is just plain weird and proof of how deep this cult runs. But, you know, he is clearly not campaigning because he's exhausted. And he would never admit to that, because he likes to give the impression that he is a strong man in the dictatorial sense. But I was looking at some video of him from a couple of years ago, and he really has aged. I mean, it has changed him significantly. He is much more gaunt, and that's why these videos he's been putting out recently in front of the mahogany fireplace, he's actually had to paint himself mahogany in order to kind of look like he's alive.
Yeah, he looks a mess. I mean, you really see it during the break. I think I tweeted yesterday that, like, my favorite part of this trial is when he comes out on the breaks, because they get a break mid-morning, usually around 11 o'clock, and then they get another break around 3. And I will say, covering the trial, Trump is right about one thing. Mershon is a slave driver. I mean, he goes long stretches of time without breaks. And it's hard for me covering it, but you know, Trump is just sitting there. But Mershon is not messing around here. He is plowing through this trial, you know, one witness right after the other. That's why I also think this trial is probably going to finish a little ahead of schedule, because it seems to be going so quickly. But when you see him on these breaks, he looks like he's just boxed Mike Tyson in his prime. He looks beat up, disheveled. Even the first break, he'll come out in the first break at 11 o'clock in the morning and he looks like hell. So I think that's why I said at the beginning, the optics of this trial, how he looks, how he sounds, is gonna hurt him more than the actual evidence itself.
It's also pretty insulting to anybody who has a regular job where they work 8, 9, 10, 11 hours a day. When Trump's complaining that he's got to sit in a courtroom for 6, 7, or 8 hours and do nothing effectively other than listen. I mean, it's so, you know, his base are the working people of America, supposedly, and yet here he is moaning that he can't do a day's work. And maybe it's exposing the fact that he never has.
Well, and let's think about this. Mershon goes from 9:30 to 5, okay, but typically they've been knocking off at 4, 4:30. So let's say 9:30 to 4:30. How many hours is that? 7. And he's taking 15, 20-minute break in the mid-morning, an hour and a half for lunch, and 15, 20 minutes more in the afternoon. So we're really only talking about like 5, 5.5 hours tops. And then he took Monday off and Wednesday off. I mean, they've had more off days than on days, and Trump is exhausted from this schedule.
Let's very quickly talk about the hoax that was, I have to go to Barron's graduation. Because, you know, people have been making a whole thing of this. We talked about it last week. You know, we were looking to see if he'd gone to any other of his children's graduations. He doesn't want to go to Barron's graduation, does he? But this, again, is tugging on the heartstrings. It's emotional blackmail. And it's gaslighting. Let's take a quick look at this clip.
That means Donald Trump isn't even allowed to attend his son Barron's high school graduation. If he tries to go, the judge will throw him in jail for that, too.
As you know, my son has graduated from high school, and it looks like the judge will not let me go through the graduation of my son, who's worked very, very hard. He's a great student. He's very proud of the fact that he did so well. I was looking forward for years to have graduation with his mother and father there. And it looks like the judge isn't going to allow me to escape this scam.
Well, it's not true for a start, is it? Because he now is allowed to go to the graduation.
Fox spent days on this, like show after show after show. The judge won't let Trump go to his son's funeral. This heartless, cruel judge. And as we said at the time, it was all a lie. Everything that Jesse Waters said there, if Trump goes to his son's graduation, he'll be locked up. It's all a lie. It was all fabricated. What the judge said, as we've said before, is he said, look, you're asking to have a day off 7 weeks from now. Let's get the trial started. Let's see how things go. I'll let you know soon. And basically, like I said, what he was saying to Trump is, as long as your lawyers don't try and play games and try and gum up the works and this trial moves smoothly as it's planned, I will give you this. But if your lawyers act like fools and gum up this trial, I might not. And so what happened is the first week went smoothly, jury selection went smoothly, and the judge came in on Monday morning and said, a Tuesday morning and said, yes, I'm going to let you go to the graduation, no problem. He never denied it. He just said he was going to think about it. And they made this huge thing. Now here, I don't think Trump really expected him to grant this. I think Trump has it in his head that this judge hates his guts and is going to rule against him on everything, which is not true. I can tell you throughout the trial, this judge has sustained objections for Trump's lawyers. He's excluded evidence that his lawyers wanted out. This judge has been playing this very even. Half his rulings have gone in favor of the state and half of the defense, right down the middle. So this is not true. But I think Trump didn't think he would allow it. And the judge called his bluff. So now what does this mean? I think that the graduation is on a Thursday. Trump is going to have to leave New York. And he's been staying in New York, except for on the weekends. He's going to have to leave New York in the middle of the week, fly down to Palm Beach, go to the graduation and turn right around and fly back. I don't believe Trump wants to do that, but now he's got to.
It's so funny, though, isn't it? Like the whole thing is like playing Trump at his own game. But, you know, the point that you make there, as I transcribe it, is that Trump has no concept of due process because it's not something that he's ever really thought about or been open to, because him, everything is black and white. You're either one of those or you're one of those, and you're either with me or you're not with me. And there's loyalty and there's all that kind of mafia stuff that he's into. So the idea of actually, I mean, the word is justice, isn't it? And it's not something that Trump really understands.
Have you ever heard Trump or his lawyers or Alina Habba or Fox or Newsmax say one thing positive about the, you know, acknowledge that the judge has ruled in his favor a number of times. How about him not locking him up for this contempt violation? Yeah. I mean, the judge is bending over backwards again, as all other judges have done, to be fair. But you will never hear Trump come out and say, you know what, Judge Mershon was very fair today. You know, he made some good rulings in our favor, and I really appreciate that. No, they just gloss right over those. At least Fox could do that, acknowledge that once in a while, but they don't. It's always a persecution and victimhood. He revels in it. He wallows in it. He loves to play the victim. That's his favorite thing, which is kind of surprising considering MAGA views him as this tough, macho alpha male when he does nothing but whine and cry every single day.
He's a wet noodle. That's what he is. He's a little scared, kind of cowardly noodle. And I really feel that these impromptu press conferences afterwards, they do expose him for who he really is. And, you know, when he's tired and it's at the end of the day and he's not like puffed up for a fake video, it's like, okay, this is who we're really dealing with. And right. It also makes people think, hopefully it makes people think, that this guy wouldn't be able to run the country. He can't even get through a day's worth of testimony where he has to sit and listen. And that's really the true test, isn't it, of stamina. Meanwhile, Joe Biden, you know, being criticized for being too old, is like relentless in his ability to kind of maintain the job and be on it. Listen, Ron, we have to take a quick break, but I want to come back and talk about Marjorie Taylor Greene and her plan to, or a motion to vacate the Speaker of the House. That's next here on Uncovered. Do you remember cereal being one of the best parts of being a kid? Well, as I got older, I had to watch for sugar and empty carbs. Well, Magic Spoon has the amazing flavors you love, but high protein and less sugar. You can get the variety pack, 4 flavors, cocoa, fruity, frosted, and peanut butter. This pack has no grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and 4 to 5 grams of net carbs, and only 140 calories per serving. It's high protein, has no grams of sugar, keto-friendly, gluten-free, grain-free, and soy-free. Go to magicspoon.com/uncovered to grab a variety pack and try it today. And be sure to use the promo code UNCOVERED at checkout to save $5 off your order. And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. Remember, start your day off right with a delicious bowl of high-protein cereal at magicspoon.com/uncovered and use code UNCOVERED to save $5 off. Thank you, Magic Spoon, for sponsoring this episode. Have you heard about Senolytics yet? It's a class of ingredients discovered less than 10 years ago, and they're being called the biggest discovery of our time for promoting healthy aging and enhancing your physical prime. Your life goals in your career and beyond require productivity, but let's be honest, the aging process is not our friend when it comes to endless energy and productivity, and that's why I use Qualia Senolytic. If someone would have told me that there was science-backed ingredients that could help me feel 15 years younger in a matter of months, I wouldn't have believed it. Then I tried Qualia Senolytic. As we age, everyone accumulates senescent cells in their body. Senescent cells cause symptoms of aging, such as aches and discomfort, slow workout recovery, sluggish mental and physical energy associated with that middle-age feeling. Also known as zombie cells, they are old and worn out and not serving a useful function for our health anymore, but they're taking up space and nutrients from our healthy cells. Much like pruning the yellowing and dead leaves off a plant, Qualia Senolytic removes those worn-out senescent cells to allow for the rest of them to thrive in the body. Resist aging at the cellular level. Try Qualia Senolytic. Go to neurohacker.com/uncovered for up to $100 off and use code UNCOVERED at checkout for an additional 15% off. That's neurohacker.com/uncovered for an extra 15% off your purchase. Thank you, Neurohacker, for sponsoring today's episode. And you can find links to our sponsors in the description below. Okay, welcome back. Let's talk about Mike Johnson. He's on thin ice right now. This is actually a really interesting scenario, isn't it? Because Marjorie Taylor Greene and, you know, her group, Thomas Massie and that whole bunch, they want him out because they're saying that he's a snowflake and he's colluding with the Democrats and he's doing Democrat stuff because, you know, of approving the aid to Ukraine. But, you know, and then there's another argument that, like, well, maybe the Democrats should support this and then put Hakeem Jeffries in, and Hakeem Jeffries would be a Democrat speaker, and that would be better for everybody. But then there are people on the fence. I mean, it's kind of a confusing scenario, this, isn't it? And I suppose a lot of purists would say, well, look, if we've been complaining about Mike Johnson for so long for his extremist views, for a start, you know, this far-right Christian nationalist stuff, he's also an insurrectionist, we shouldn't forget. So if she wants him out, then maybe it is a good thing for him to leave. Just kind of make sense of this for people who might be thinking, you know, what on earth is happening in Congress right now?
Yeah, you're right. It is confusing. Here's what I can tell you. I mean, for a few months there, February, March, nothing was happening in the House. Nothing could get through. Johnson was blocking everything. And the foreign aid was bottled up, the border bill, everything. Even the budget stuff was bottled up. And it just seemed like nothing was going to happen. Nothing was going to get done. This guy was going to obstruct everything. And then all of a sudden, he came out and he was like a different guy one day. This was 2 weeks ago. It was on the 17th of April.
Yeah.
I won't forget it. He came out and he was like a completely different guy. He gave this very statesmanlike speech about how Putin was terrible and Russia was threatening its neighbors. And he had been in all these briefings and he saw the light and he understood that these foreign aid bills needed to get passed. And he didn't care what the far right people were saying about Ukraine. And it was like a totally different guy. And I tweeted at the time, I said, you know what? This is strange. I said, he is talking like a guy who has just been assured by Democrats that they will support him if Marjorie brings a motion to vacate. Because he's acting like he's very confident all of a sudden. And he was a scared rabbit before that. He was scared of his shadow. Now he's acting like he's Clint Eastwood, you know, in a Western.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, what the story comes out yesterday that, yes, in fact, Democrats are prepared to block a motion to vacate under the theory that whoever replaces him on the Republican side would be worse.
Yes.
And Mike Johnson has basically given them everything that they wanted on the budget in 4-8. There's not a whole hell of a lot left to do. Impeachment is dead for Biden. Comer's shop is closed. And so what the calculus among Democrats is like, look, we kind of like this weak speaker who we can kind of push around a little bit. And we feel confident we're going to win the majority. So let's not rock the boat and let's give Marge and the rebels a loss. And so, you know, Marge came out this morning. I think we got the clip and announced that, you know, she's going to bring the motion to vacate next week. Who's with her on this is Massey and Gosar. So he's got three votes, but that would be enough to oust him. But if all the Democrats join them, but apparently the Democrats are not going to join him. So what we're going to see next week is Marjorie's going to go out. She's going to bring the motion next week. Presumably Democrats are going to join to block it. And we'll see how many other the interesting thing is how many other Republicans are going to join them. That will be interesting. And then to watch the fallout in MAGA world, in MAGA media and the podcast universe to see how crazy they get over Johnson being protected by Democrats.
Yeah, well, because she, you know, is using this as a ploy so that people can see Democrats voting for this far-right speaker.
Right.
And she sees that as a real strategic maneuver to ultimately, you know, win more support in the election. Let's take a look at the presser from this morning.
I think every member of Congress needs to take that vote and let the chips fall where they may. And so next week, I am going to be calling this motion to vacate. Absolutely calling it. I can't wait to see Democrats go out and support a Republican speaker and have to go home to their primaries and have to run for Congress again, having supported a Republican speaker, a Christian conservative. I think that'll play well. I'm excited about it. And I also can't wait to see my Republican conference show their cards and show who we are. because voters deserve it.
Everything they do is performative, and it's strategic to kind of own the libs, isn't it? It's like there's no policy, there's no interest in doing anything for the American people or for their constituents. It's all about owning the libs and giving the impression that they're winning in the moment. And it's exhausting.
Except in this particular case, she's owning the Republicans. You know, she's right. Owning her colleagues, because what she's bragging about there is she wants to force them to vote to save Johnson. And then she wants to use that against them. So she's basically like lighting her own party on fire. She's bragging about, she's saying, this is what I want to do. I want to show voters what she believes is that the overwhelming majority of Republican voters agree with her on this, and that she will come out of this as a hero to the MAGA base and the grassroots of the Republican Party. And this is, while this might torch the Republican majority in the House, it's going to benefit her personally. And that's her angle.
She's not the sharpest tool in the box, is she? And I suppose this is the problem. When she might not be the sharpest, but she has the loudest voice. And, you know, this is the whole MO of MAGA Republicans, is, you know, make as much noise as possible. And that's why I try and reassure people that ask me, you know, how much support is there for Trump versus for the Democrats. And it's like, well, the Democrats don't make an awful lot of noise, but the MAGA Republicans do. And, you know, I think I've used this analogy before. Forgive me if I have. But in the emergency room, from the doctors that I've spoken to, they always worry about the people sitting quietly. You know, they're like, they're the ones who need help. The ones who are screaming and shouting, oh, I'm in pain. Like, they're fine, you know. And I feel that with this bunch, too. It's like, methinks the lady doth protest too much.
Yeah. And the big question it always is like, how much do you cover this, her, you know, how much do you cover her mania? And my policy is I don't cover Marge when she's mouthing off about Nancy Pelosi or Joe Biden or Ukraine, or, you know, I pretty much ignore all of that, which is, you know, 90%. But when she goes after Mike Johnson or she goes after other Republicans, I'm always going to cover that. And I think that's when you do cover green, and she does that plenty.
It's a bit like the food chain, isn't it? It's like, who's eating who? And I just get the sense that there's going to be an implosion of the traditional Republican Party, if it hasn't happened already. This kind of Freedom Caucus or former Freedom Caucus members such as her, is that they really don't have the brains to have any kind of long-lasting strategy. You know, Democrats play a much longer game. And there's obviously Democrats have Simon Rosenberg refers to it as a dysfunctional family. And I think, you know, that's a very good way to describe the Democrats. But really with Republicans, it's very simple issues that they, you know, these kind of hot button issues that they tend to kind of repeat time and time again, much of it laced with racism.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about, talking of which, let's talk about Ron DeSantis. Because he's been kind of quoted, or I'll show the video and then we can kind of talk about what he's up to. But this is another kind of kiss the ring moment. I've always been very fond of that phrase. Here it is.
Almost like with Donald Trump, if you don't kiss the ring, you could be the best governor ever and he'll trash you. You could be a terrible, corrupt politician, but if you kiss his ring, then all of a sudden he'll praise you.
So the rumor is that maybe DeSantis, after a meeting with Donald Trump, could be being considered as a vice president pick. Any truth?
Well, I don't think that. I think that what he's looking for is he's looking ahead to 2028. You know, he clearly wants to run again, of course. And he's hoping either Trump will endorse him or not trash him at the very least.
Yeah.
Or if he's still alive, which is very iffy. Or at least if he's not alive or not around, he'll be able to capture Trump's voters. He'll be the heir apparent to the MAGA base. This is what he's hoping, and this is why he's doing this. The interesting thing about this is, and yes, that video is from several months ago during the primary. It's from December, I believe,
yeah.
where right before the Iowa caucus, where he was saying that you could be the worst, most corrupt person in the world, but if you kiss the ring, Trump will support you and say good things about you. Well, guess what? You know, that's exactly what he wants. He wants, he's kissed the ring this week. He met with Trump a couple days ago. But the interesting thing about it is this. Trump put out a statement saying, DeSantis has agreed to, you know, enthusiastically support me. He's behind me 100%. He puts out the statement, but a couple things. Number one, DeSantis has not said one word about this meeting. Not a word. Hasn't tweeted. The only thing he tweeted on that day is announcing that red snapper season has begun in Florida for fishing. He did not say a word about meeting with Trump. He was tweeting about red snapper. Okay, so the second thing is no pictures. I mean, these are people that love photos.
Yeah.
That put out tons of photos and videos of themselves behind the scenes, everything that they do. Not even anything leaked. Nothing. I tried. I searched all the usual sources to get some behind the scenes stuff. I got nothing. So this thing was locked down, and that had to be at DeSantis's insistence. You would think that Trump would want to put that out, showing DeSantis surrendering, but I'm sure that that was a condition of DeSantis, that he did not want that put out. He did not want any photos showing him sucking up to Trump or kissing the ring. And that was his condition. That was the one thing he wanted.
Yeah.
And Trump, what did Trump want? Trump wants the money. Trump wants those big DeSantis donors. He wants DeSantis to make those phone calls to those donors, telling them to put their money behind Trump.
It's orange snapper season, by the looks of things. I want to talk about Rudy Giuliani. He's obviously had a huge fall from grace, and is, you know, now implicated in the Arizona case as well. Let's just take a look at this clip of him confessing before we expose exactly what he's on about.
With Brennan. When they were hatching, when he was informed of Hillary coming up with the false plot, it should begin with him, and it should include Brennan, it should include Biden, the vice president, who approved it and helped out. They should bring over from Ukraine about 20 Ukrainian witnesses, I can get them, that are still being held there. A couple I found out very recently are in fear of death. And somebody should lean on Zelensky. You want another penny? Give us your Biden. Give us your Biden file.
A little more extortion of the leader of Ukraine. That's an unusual suggestion from Rudy Giuliani. I mean, what is it with this guy? I mean, he's bonkers, isn't he?
So I watched that interview, which was with Steve Bannon, I believe. And I watched it because he was talking about his new indictment in Arizona. And what I was looking for is the fact that there's basically two people on the legal team that got indicted. Well, three: Jenna Ellis, Christina Bobb, and Rudy. Now, Christina Bobb is probably the key, most important one here, because Rudy's been indicted before. He's disbarred. He's off the Trump legal team. Jenna Ellis, same thing. Trump got rid of her a long time ago, and she's been indicted in Georgia too. But Christina Bobb has not. Christina Bobb is still on the Trump payroll, and she was just brought in to the RNC as their election integrity director for the 2024 election. So her getting indicted is big.
Yeah.
So what I was watching there is what Rudy said earlier in the interview, which is he's actually trying to blame Christina and push the blame, deflect the blame from himself onto her. He's basically saying, look, I was in the hospital at that time with COVID. I was dealing with Georgia and these other things. Christina was the point person for Arizona, so you need to go ask her what happened. So he's basically throwing her under the bus, which is the reason why I watched that interview. However, in the end of the interview, he comes up with this statement, which is basically a confession to what Trump was impeached for, what they denied.
Right.
What he said was that what he's saying there is he's talking about Mike Johnson and Jim Jordan. And what he was saying is that if it's ridiculous that we're giving Ukraine aid. And what he said is that they, Mike Johnson and Jim Jordan, should call Zelensky and tell him that until they give him all the dirt that they have on Biden, they will not pass any more aid for Ukraine, which is exactly what Trump was impeached for doing, him and Rudy, which they denied at the time. So clearly, that to me, that's a confession to that they are guilty of what they were accused of in 2017.
And it's these inconsistencies that are ultimately what's going to nail them in the end. I mean, he's already been nailed and disbarred and everything else. But, you know, the point is with these people that it's not just a paper trail. It's a video trail. It's an audio trail. And the evidence these days is so compelling. And as you say, for some reason, Republicans love to film themselves doing everything. And you know, so they use subpoena the phones, and before you know it, the evidence is ramped up. Rudy did a costume change, didn't he? And we have another video now of him really kind of mentioning Christina Bob and talking about using her. Let's have a look at this.
Now,
when you say that, go into that a little bit.
Well, I didn't spend as much time on Arizona as I did, let's say, with Georgia, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. I know those better. I used Christina Bob to a large extent. And I'm not putting anything off on Christina. Christina said it happened. It's probably even more accurate than if I said it happened.
I mean, I don't know where to start with this guy because, you know, he also plays the strongman role, you know, with the signet ring and that kind of mafia attitude. And the reality is that once the curtain falls, and, you know, this really is the not just the Emperor's New Clothes, it's all of those analogies, isn't it? It's the Wizard of Oz and everything. I mean, it's just, a sad, bitter, lonely man who is confessing to crimes and dropping his co-conspirators in it.
It's just, that's just an incredible statement that he makes where he's, and he gave other interviews where he's more specific about having COVID, where he's saying like, I really had nothing to do with Arizona. It was all Christina Bob. And then he sprinkles in, well, I'm not trying to throw her under the bus anymore, but she really did do everything.
But he also says that I was too busy to distracted doing Georgia.
Yeah,
he says like I was doing Georgia, like fixing the Georgia election. I mean, you couldn't have any more clarity. And this is what doesn't surprise me, but it just saddens me because, you know, this guy is supposed to be America's mayor. I mean, you know, this is somebody who's like traded on a story, you know, since 9/11, traded on a story of being this kind of great leader. And this is what it's come to.
Yeah, I think a lot of these people are being exposed for what the corrupt people that they always were. It's just that, you know, Trump brought it all out. Trump aired all the dirty laundry. I mean, somebody wrote this week something very interesting, which I thought was correct. I think it comes from Stuart Stevens's book that he wrote. He wrote a really good book a while back called It Was All a Lie, where he's talking about how he realized one day that everything he was George W. Bush's campaign manager. And he said, you know, he realized when Trump came along that what Trump did is he revealed things about people he thought he knew in the Republican Party his whole life. He revealed things in them. Trump didn't make them that way. He revealed things in them that were always there. And yeah. he brought out the truth about who they were, you know, so.
And with so many of these people, you know, in hindsight, we're discovering that public service was never really at the top of their agenda ever. It was about enriching themselves. It was about celebrity and just creating a lifestyle. And it's too sad, you know, because people vote for these people. People have given, you know, put their trust in these people. And, you know, to imagine that Rudy Giuliani, this kind of great mayor, turned out to be one of the people that tried to overturn a legitimate U.S. general election. It's just jokes. Okay, we're going to take another quick break. And then I want to come back and talk about Puppygate, something that has set the internet on fire. So we'll see what's going on with that next here on Uncovered. Mother's Day is coming soon, and if you're looking for a gift for mum that's also a gift to Mother Earth, Lomi is the perfect solution. You can reduce your carbon footprint by up to 127% in such a simple way, because when food waste goes to landfill, it breaks down into methane, a greenhouse gas 80 times stronger than carbon dioxide. With Lomi, turn your food waste into nutrient-rich plant food. Food waste isn't actually waste at all. It's a valuable resource for our planet. Lomi helps transform food scraps into nutrient-rich plant food for your garden, houseplants, or yard. It feels great to know that you are creating Lomi Earth instead of waste. I now have a limitless supply of plant food for my garden, plus I'm helping save the planet. Don't miss out on your chance to get the best gift for yourself and Mother Earth. Order your Lomi today. Head to lomi.com/uncovered and use the promo code UNCOVERED to get $50 off your Lomi. That's $50 off when you head to lomi.com/uncovered and use promo code UNCOVERED at checkout. Thank you, Lomi, for sponsoring this episode. Ron Filipkowski, my dear friend, let's talk about Puppygate. I tend not to really pay much attention to any of these distractions because I'm, you know, too busy with the serious stuff. This has actually turned out to be very serious, hasn't it? Just explain why.
This is just devastating. It's just cross party line. When this broke, of course, you know, her writing in her book that she shot her dog, her puppy, because he was misbehaving and untrainable. It was just mind-blowing that she would even bring this up, right? This isn't something she got caught doing. That's where I was trying to think of, like, what other scandal where somebody basically just admitted to a scandal that no one else would have known about ever if they hadn't admitted to it. I mean, the closest thing I came up with was, like, Gary Hart in 1992 was rumored to be having affairs or an affair, and he dared the press. He told the media covering him, and he's like, follow me. This is what he said. Follow me around. You can follow me around. I'm as clean as a whistle. You'll never find anything. They literally followed him around, and a few days later caught him on a yacht with Donna Rice. So, you know, I think that's the closest thing I could come to of a dumb thing to just out yourself like that. But this was just crazy because this cuts across party lines. Everybody connects to this kind of thing, you know, shooting a puppy because it was misbehaving. And so the crazy thing is many very smart people had her as Trump's running mate, the front runner. And I had her number two. I've of course picked Stefanik many times, but I had as number two. And a lot of people really liked her. Not only did this completely torpedo, and the Trump camp has already said, like, we're not considering her anymore. And Trump is holding an apprentice style, you know, you're fired, you're hired retreat this weekend at Mar-a-Lago, where he is going to interview prospective candidates, just like he did on The Apprentice for 3 days. She has been uninvited to that. So she's not only is she out from that, but I think her political career is over. She was somebody who was going to run in 2028. Her and DeSantis hate each other. They've had this feud running for years because I think that they both knew that they were going to be the big matchup in 2028 for the Republicans. And she's just wrecked. I don't think she can come back from this.
Don't shoot your pets is probably the lesson that we should learn from this. And,
don't admit to it.
and don't admit to it. So she's very good friends with Kimberly Guilfoyle. Let's take a look at Kimberly being interviewed about this story.
You know, I just can't imagine that because there's a forever home for all animals. I don't know what happened. Maybe somebody slipped that in and she didn't see it. I don't know, but it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. So that's a tough one to take.
Yeah, I know, and I respect everything she's done for her state and the movement. And I just
maybe someone slipped that story into her book that she wrote and proofread before it went to press. I mean, come on.
So the reason why I watched that interview was last night, and it was because Kim has a children's book out now about puppies, about a rescue puppy.
You couldn't make this stuff up.
She did not. Some people speculated that she came out with this to capitalize on the gnome controversy. That's not true. I mean, I'll give Kim her due here. This book has been in the works for a little while, but it is about a puppy that's been rescued dog. And so she was out promoting her book. And of course, she's out with a puppy book like 2 days after this scandal breaks. So I knew she was going to get asked about this. And what both of them said is, look, we like Christie, but this is really bad. You know, they both admitted that. But then when she made that comment, I thought, geez, this is just crazy. She said, well, maybe that got slipped into the book without Christie knowing. and somebody did that to sabotage her, which, of course, you know, Christie has already admitted that she wrote that and tried to explain it. So
and then, of course, the host in that sequence then says, oh, she's done a lot of great stuff for her state, you know, just trying to address the balance. And that's where the propaganda is just so exposed as being performative and just, you know, everybody's kind of desperate to kind of pull the team together. Okay, we have some kind of late breaking news about Mike Lindell, don't we?
Tell
us about this. And you tweeted this story. Just explain to us what it is.
Well, you can see at the bottom, Grant Stern, this is his story that he's been working on for many, many months. And he told me about it a couple days ago, that it was coming out, and gave me a little bit of the details, but not all. And, you know, it came out today, and this is really unbelievable story, which is Mike Lindell, you know, was hyping for months that he had this new evidence that he had just discovered. And he put that in the petition for Carrie Lake's lawsuit. See, this is the lawsuit for Carrie Lake to overturn the governor's election in Arizona from 2022, saying that her election was stolen, the machines were tampered with, et cetera. So this was already, she lost this in trial court, she lost in the appellate court, and now she's petitioned the Supreme Court to take the case. Mike Lindell announced that he had all this explosive new evidence that they attached. So they file all this evidence with the Supreme Court, I think 3-4 weeks ago. And it turns out that some of the people who have been investigating some of this stuff in Arizona, Georgia, Pennsylvania, noticed that some of this stuff was illegally obtained. It was confidential election data that had been tampered with by either Lindell or Lindell's experts. This is Carrie Lake's lawsuit, but Lindell put up a lot of the money behind it. He's financing, he's paying the lawyers. So that's how he's involved. So this, and by the way, the Supreme Court rejected the case. They refused to hear the case. So not only was this yet another fail, but this new stuff that Lindell filed appears to be very incriminating evidence against him or somebody else that they tampered with more voting machines again, which could cause him or some others to be indicted again in Pennsylvania and Georgia.
Let's take a look at Mike Lindell and his kind of interesting reaction to this. Here it is.
And we're able to add new evidence, which just came about 3 months ago. This evidence is more explosive than any evidence I've seen, and I've seen a lot. This is going to shock the world on Thursday, and it's Lou. I've never been more optimistic and excited. I really believe these Supreme Court justices—they have grandchildren, children, they have families, and they have neighbors—and they see the destruction of our country. Just like they made the 9-0 vote for the Constitution with the Colorado keeping our great real president on the ballot. I believe if they accept this, this evidence is so explosive that it'll have to be another 9-0 vote. I'm so excited. And I'll tell you, we really need everybody's help, too. The only thing that can stop this, we've got to get.
I mean, they're all nuts, but I mean, he really takes the biscuit. I mean, this is going to get him into even more hot water. I mean, he's already been selling off the sewing machines at MyPillow. What has he got left?
Not only did the Supreme Court not take the case, but Lindell may be indicted for this explosive new evidence, which might be had been illegally obtained. So he's being investigated for crimes in Pennsylvania and Georgia because of this, and possibly at some point even Arizona. So this is not, Mike Lindell is not in for a happy ending to his saga.
And I should also just point out and remind people that whenever they talk about, and Trump talks about, you know, the Democrats are destroying the country and, you know, their opponents destroying the country and we've got to win because we need to get the country back. What they're saying is that they want the white man to reign supreme. This is white supremacy. This is systemic racism. They hate the fact that the demographic is changing in the United States, that you know, the kind of as you know, people kind of with intermarriage and various things, they would want it to go back to segregation. It's very clear what it is they're looking for. And then there's, of course, the evangelical Christian side of it as well, where they want the country to be a white Christian nationalist country. And so every time we hear people like Mike Lindell or Donald Trump especially talking about taking our country back, as I translate it, it is just pure discrimination and racism. They hate the fact that minority groups now have a voice. They hate the LGBTQ plus community. And with that comes this fight to kind of make America great again, but it's white again. And we have to keep reminding people that that's what this is all about.
I think that for the grassroots, that's certainly the case for a lot of them. And I think that messaging that these people use, Donald Trump, I think that's also part of what they believe. Yes. But I think the larger picture for me is they want to control the levers of power so they can make all of this stuff go away. All the criminality that they've done,
right?
If they control the government, then all of this stuff goes away. So I think it's even bigger than that. I think that they use that messaging, the racist messaging and all of that, to acquire power. But I don't think that for some of them, at least not for Donald Trump, I don't think that that's really the main point. I think the main point is for him to acquire power so he can use it for his own self. But I think for what you're saying is for the at the influencer level, at the grassroots level, that is definitely the case. Yeah.
And we should probably just mention, you know, the Supreme Court this week and this, you know, their desire, it seems, to give some immunity to Donald Trump. Now, I predicted this. I was like, of course they're in the tank for Trump. They're absolutely gonna, you know, because of the way that the court is stacked, plus those three justices that he added in the last period of his presidency who owe him one, you know, they get lifetime appointments. I mean, this really does kind of upset the apple cart of democracy, doesn't it?
It's hard to say what they're going to rule here. It's clear that they're not going to grant blanket immunity for all presidents, saying you can't be prosecuted for anything. It also seems pretty clear that they're not going to rule the way the D.C. Circuit ruled, which is you don't get immunity at all except while you're in office, and you don't get it after you leave office. It appears what they're going to do is fashion this middle ground, but the language that they use in this immunity test is going to be, the devil's going to be in the details here, which is they're going to find some limited immunity, some situations where a former president cannot be prosecuted. The question is, what are those going to be? That's what we don't know. And so that's the frightening part. And that's what could really gum up this trial, is you're having a jury kind of have to sift through when a president does and does not get immunity.
And it will mean that Jack Smith might not even get to make his case. It's really an issue for him. And you really have to ask yourself, what kind of country are we living in when the Supreme Court says that the elected president suddenly has, you know, ultimate power? I mean, we really are into this kind of despotism, and it's very dangerous. And that's why, you know, I recommend you take a look at the Time magazine article that was published day before yesterday that has caused a huge stir. I actually made a video about that, which will be appearing on the Midas Touch Network very shortly. Okay, we have to finish in just a second, but before we do, we have some very good news, don't we? And that is that Kitara is back. She has come back from the grave, the dead, the wardrobe, the closet, I don't know. We're talking, of course, about the former Congressman George Santos and his alter ego. Here's the video.
Hey, Club Condo. It's your favorite, Kitara. after 18 years in the closet, George Santos pulled me back out. Whatever. Anyway, I hear you're a bunch of little freaks out there and you love to dance all night long like it's nobody's business. You know what? You gotta elevate it. Gotta make it more risque. You gotta make it more where's the zhush? I have an advice for you. How about put some wigs on, get some boas, and go have real fun. Let's see who whips your hair faster, you know, side to side, whatever. But y'all gotta stop being boring. Dave essentially thinks you're boring because he wants you all to be more risque. Mwah. All the love. I hope y'all enjoy it.
Let's see you swish your hair, Ron.
Come I got a little scared when his dress started to fall down, you know, and then he pulled it back up, which was good.
I have no words for this item. No words.
Well, I don't think
you should either.
Was when I think it was Daily Mail that originally broke the story like a year ago that he was a drag queen in Brazil. And, you know, the funny part about this is he adamantly denied it.
That's
he
right.
said yeah, he said never admitted that. Yeah. He said, no, this is not true.
Yeah.
This is disgusting smear. And that's not me in that picture. And I didn't do it. And it's not me. And so all this time goes by. And then here's what happened. As we know, when he got kicked out of Congress, he went up on Cameo. And that's how he was making his living. And he apparently was making a lot of money. And of course, you know, all these things are, you make a lot of money the first month and then it starts to fizzle out. The novelty's gone. You know, it's not interesting anymore. And that's what happened. You know, he made a ton of money and got a lot of publicity and then it kind of like fizzled out. And so what has he decided to do to revive interest in his thing? He announces he's going to now do cameos as Kitara. And he admitted in that video, in that clip, that he was in fact a drag queen years ago. So that was yet another lie. Now the final postscript here to the Santos story is, look, this guy's coming up for trial in September. So this has an expiration date, this show. And I try not to get too caught up in it, but it's hard for me not to pay attention to Santos because he is somewhat interesting. But Santos is not going to trial. He's already said that he wants to make a deal. He's hoping to make a deal where he can plead guilty and not do jail time. He wants probation. That's clearly not going to happen. He's going to be incarcerated.
He and Peter Navarro very much on the same page.
Yeah, but he's going to get more time than Peter.
Yeah.
And so what's really happening here is he's just going to drag this out, wait till the last minute, and he's ultimately going to plead guilty and go to prison. But in the meantime, we're going to have Kitara doing cameos if you want to get one.
Swish, swish. Okay, we have to finish. Ron, always a pleasure. I don't know how I get through the whole week without you, but, you know, we'll do it again next Wednesday, same time. If you want to download the audio podcast, you can get that from wherever you get yours. It'll be available later this evening. Don't forget to check out our sponsors. They're in the description below. And, rewind the show and watch it again. Share it and all that stuff. Please comment. We read everything, and we're thrilled for the Midas Mighty community. Ron, have a good week.
See you next week.